Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chelly.
August 26, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And this is the show you were looking for. I know this because you're hearing me say what I'm saying. Friars Day, Friday night, the last broadcast day of the week for the O'Chelly Effect, for sure. You know, I'm still tweaking the microphone here and trying to make sure you don't hear my air conditioner, because it's still humid, even though it poured rain where I'm sitting and all that good stuff. Past couple of days, it dumped some rain. Anyway, is what it is, and you didn't tune in for a weather report, did you? Friday, like I said, and we're going to continue with the discussion from last week where we were confronting the 16 questions from Wolfgang Hellbag. Hellbag. I don't know. How do you pronounce it? Who cares? Anyway. Hellbig?
Hellbig.
Hellbig. Like, big hell or how? Like how the computer?
How, like the supercomputer. How?
Okay. How? What are you doing, Dave? Okay. How big?
How big?
How big?
Yeah, it's German.
All right.
H-A-L-B-I-G.
How big? All right, gotcha.
How big?
How big? Okay, got it. Anyway, yeah, confronting his questions, and we're going to do that live, and you guys can join us. That's my co-host, B. Pete, by the way, by dialing in 319-527-5016. 319-527-5016. And yeah, we'll continue on it, and no need to digress into the Fetzer Panic Attack Jones area this week at all, because we covered it last week. Also, just want to let you guys know, on the network, I do have, I did release Jack Blood's show earlier today, but you'll notice that Wednesday's show was not released, Thursday's show was not released yet. They're ready to go, and I'm probably going to put them out during Aaron's live show tonight, which Aaron's live show is going to be weird because, well, you know what? I'm not going to tell you, but you might have to go tune into some video stuff tonight on Aaron's show because we're going to do something strange. Yeah, you never know. Aaron likes to experiment, which is another thing I love about having him. Also, he's been the most consistent, long-standing guy, so you know, let's celebrate. The Age of Transitions has been here now for a couple of years with O'Chelly.com, despite the fact that hardly anybody else seems to last that long or even half as long as Aaron has. I'm still looking for new people to produce, by the way, and would love to have some production assistance. Anyway, you can write to info@O'Chelly.com if you like, and tell me what it is you'd like to do to participate in the network. And we'll see what we can find for you to do. Whether you want to be a host or you want to produce or you want to actually operate the live stuff, take a burden off of me, one of these things, graphics, anything. I got spots for writers. The only thing I don't got is pay. If we took in enough money, I'd be more than happy to pay you, but we don't. So I can get you some experience. I can teach you a few things in exchange for you teaching me that you're good at something. Anyway, enough of the solicitation. I need your participation tonight. 319-527-5016. Again, get in on the discussion about Sandy Hook, the questions, the controversy, all of that. And before we go there, B. Pete, let me just check in with you. How you doing? I mean, I don't know if you want to give us a weather report or tell us about what's been going on just in general. Home improvement is still in progress, I know, with you. So, I mean, you got a lot of things you could report on. Maybe Mrs. O will call in and give us a puppy report. By the way, Buster is pretty big compared to the other little doggies. But anyway, who cares about that right now? B. Pete, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. It's been off and on rain all week. Job site's a mess. I got to go in tomorrow, go in Sunday. Getting ready to do a big traffic shift, so. Which makes no sense on a holiday weekend. That's crazy. But other than that, everything is going good. Yes, the home improvements are moving along very slowly simply because I've been working so many hours. But as wintertime comes around, those hours will drop down to normal. And we can get a lot done then.
You know, somebody told me earlier this week that I'm really stupid because I have a live chat room and I don't give live shout-outs to people in the live chat room on the show. So I'm going to do that. If I see you participating, I'm going to make an effort to give you an audio shout out. Right now, I know that Chris Graves is in the chat room. Yo, he says, and yo back at you. So, yeah, somebody told me I was really stupid for having a chat room and not talking to it ever. Although I got to tell you, I find it annoying when podcasts speak to the chat room because a lot of people get the show as podcasts later. And I find it annoying because I'm not in the chat at the time and I'm just listening to the show. Anyway, a quick shout out won't hurt nobody though. So shout out to Chris Graves once again. You got two that time for being in the chat. Of course, you can join the discussion live 319-527-5016. And I do hope that more than one of you does that tonight. We'll have open lines all the way up to midnight when Aaron's shows are done, at least midnight anyway. We usually run a few minutes over. So, no, good to hear. I know you got a lot of things in progress. You're a busy guy. You didn't give us a weather report this time. Hey, any updates on the naked news? Because you were going to tell us about that.
I tell you what, if you give me just 2 seconds, we can check the calendar. I imagine the guy got his stuff postponed, but he's due in court, I think, this past week. We'll check and see.
Cool.
Let me get this in the room. Okay, video of the week's in the room.
Oh, is that your music? Your music video of the week goes in the chat room at Ocelli.com, the live chat room, right?
Yeah, of course, yeah. Of course. Let's see. Let's look for court calendars. That's always exciting.
Fair enough. While you're doing that, I'll give people an update on the YouTube channel, which has somehow not been deleted yet. I got my third strike, and there's really nothing I can do. They've disabled my use of the channel now entirely. I think I'm disabled for the next 60 or 90 days from some certain date when they took something down. But
when they disable it, does that mean you can't do anything to it? Upload, download, nothing?
Far as I know, yeah. I mean, you might be able to delete things, I think. But you have to go through this whole thing where they force you to review the thing that you got a strike for and all this, which I've done. And oddly, I have now exceeded the third strike of a certain type where you're supposed to be automatically deleted, and it has not yet been deleted. So I don't know what's going on there. Our friend from Australia, big shout out to Ray, because he is helping me out grabbing some of the videos off of there just in case it absolutely vanishes. Maybe I'll be able to put them up on my BitChute or something like that. I do have a BitChute account, and they gave me some trouble for getting onto it, so I've just left it there and haven't done much with it. I've got a Rumble account. I've got a BitChute. I've got Rockfin. I've got a few places where videos can go. That, you know, supposedly won't get me busted as easily as YouTube, but
did you say BitChute gave you some trouble uploading? What, they just didn't want to, it didn't want to function, or?
Well, there was two things. One, it was a password, which I swear I'm the only one who put in a password, and all of a sudden I didn't have a password, so I had to, like, do this thing where you reset.
Yeah.
And I had to reset it because they said you had changed your password to something else, which I didn't. So I don't know what happened there. But then I also tried this thing where they said you could migrate your YouTube to BitChute, where you could, yeah, take the videos and automatically whatever gets uploaded will go and get uploaded on BitChute as well. And it doesn't work. So I thought for about a month it might have been populating the BitChute channel, and I go to look, and it didn't. So I went, okay. Then it was a matter of, am I going to take the individual videos and download them and then upload them again to BitChute? And I don't have the storage capacity at the moment.
So, what browser were you using when you went to BitChute?
Oh, I tried a couple different ones. I always
still wouldn't. Okay.
Yeah, I always have. See, I know that trick because I prefer Firefox. It's functionally easy for me.
Me too.
But the problem is that sometimes Firefox literally won't show you all the buttons on websites, especially if you make it a little larger for your vision.
Yeah.
So buttons will disappear, and you literally, it's like, I don't see an option to do that. And people go, of course, it's right there. And you're like, no, it isn't. Yeah, you go to your Chrome browser or whatever, and magically the option appears.
Yeah. I've had that problem with Firefox too on some websites.
First time I saw that was the JFK Lancer conference where they were like, oh, well, here you go. You can go download your presentation, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, there is no download button. And they're like, it's right there under the video. And I'm like, there is no download button. And then what did I do? I put the Edge browser on and boom, there was the button. So I was like, okay, so Firefox just doesn't even show me a button. And I've had that happen in a couple of spots where, you know, there are things you're supposed to be able to enter on a website and can't do it because it doesn't show up on Firefox. So, yeah, I've always got a couple of things, and I hate using the Microsoft stuff, especially Edge, because they're constantly updating Edge. So I hate that one, but I do need to use it when I have to use a button or whatever.
Yeah, I've never used Edge, but maybe a couple times. I always load Firefox whenever I get a new computer. And this one, I'm using Windows 10, so now I'm getting a lot of updates to Firefox.
Right.
And it will only update so much because it's not running on 11 yet. So I got to go find me a new laptop at the pawn shop that's got 11 on it.
Well, either that or, you know, sometimes if you go to the Microsoft website, they'll give you an upgrade thing that isn't too bad.
I could do it on here, except my processor on this laptop, it's a Hewlett Packard, the processor is like the first level down that won't run 11.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Everything else, it would run, but it's just my processor is not fast enough or big enough.
Yeah, time for a new machine. Look, I'm still using Windows 8, which, by the way, they're going to stop support for entirely, I think, this month, on my 10-year-old computer, right? Which, by the way, is the reason why I'm so slow putting out shows this week, because apparently one particular file kept crashing Audacity, which then created a cascade and crashed the whole computer a couple of times. And you lose all your work. So, you know, I'll sit there editing something for an hour or two, and then I'm ready to, you know, save it and crash. So, got to start again with the raw file. And I know it sounds like I'm complaining, but yeah, the 10-year-old computer's about had it. So that's going to be the next big purchase.
Well, I always
make,
have my fallback, and that's my original gateway. It's got Windows 98 on it. Still works. Still runs.
Nice. Somebody showed me a computer the other day that had XP running on it.
My dad had XP on his before he finally passed away, and we left it on it. We use my brother's got it set up back in his kitchen to use for like looking up recipes and stuff.
Great. I loved XP. XP was like my favorite Microsoft product, you know, as far as the operating systems. Yeah. I was so mad when they got rid of it, but... Yeah,
I know. From there to Vista, good God, I hated Vista.
Well, this computer was like the first time that I voluntarily allowed something other than XP on a Microsoft machine in like years and years back. And I acquired the computer in 2014, but the thing has been around since, I think it was built in 2012 and shipped in 2013. So,
well, that's what I hated about 10 is, you know, 10 was designed for app use on a phone.
Right.
Not for a laptop or a desktop, which kind of irritates me. So I was looking forward to when they come out with something new. Now that they have 11, check the pawn shop. They've got a couple HPs in there for about $400, $425 that have it on there. So, and that's what I do with computers. I just go buy them from pawn shops. I'm not paying, you know, $1,200 for a new HP.
Oh no.
When I can go pick one up for less than half price.
You know, one last random thing before we get into the subject at hand, because I don't want to kill the more than, say, 20 minutes on random stuff. But real fast, you know, pawn shops, I love going for musical instruments as well. And, look, computers, I don't know. I'm a little iffy about that because sometimes you get one and it's like, yeah, there's a reason why this guy sold this to the pawn shop. I don't know. I'm not as trusting of that stuff. I mean, I don't mind picking up a cell phone there because either it works or don't. But, I mean, these computers, I'm not into it. But guitars, recently, two people that are kind of supporters of the show, not kind of supporters, they have been supporters in the past, offered to acquire a guitar for me because I said I don't have a six-string. They asked me to do something, and I'm like, well, look, if I had a six-string guitar and an amp, I might be able to do that, but, you know, and I can generate electronic drums and I can play bass. I've got an acoustic bass. I can, you know, fiddle with that and create an electric sound if I want, but I don't have a guitar right now. And I, because I pawned that Les Paul Jr. I had last year and couldn't get it back, so I just haven't had one. So two different people offered to get me guitars, and then one guy changed his mind, you know, like, and the other guy asked me, go, show me what it is you want, and then told me it's out of his price range. So, no guitar for me. But I'm still looking, and the next time I get some money, maybe I'll actually go get one. But priorities, I'm gonna have to get a new computer first.
Well, that's like when I bought that Ibanez 7-string. I got it over in Greenville, and Greenville's a good town for pawn shop because there's a university there.
Right.
Either a military town or a university. So I go in there, and when I get it, I'm walking out the door, and I looked back, and the owner had put a kind of a gold sunburst Gibson Les Paul up there for $1,100, and I didn't have $1,100, and I wanted to put it on layaway, but I was getting ready to start making the move, so I had to start banking money. I thought, man, and I missed a chance to buy it. Well, he said it didn't stay on the, because he advertises on the web too,
right?
And once he posted it on the website, guy called him up, said, I'll, you know, here's my credit card number. Run whatever you need for a deposit. I'll be down there to get it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of decent, like, okay, so we all know the Les Paul and the legitimate original Les Pauls. They're worth the money that people pay for them. Very nice instruments, but there's a couple of, like, lesser known, right, you know, sort of Les Pauls that have the same design. Epiphone makes one. Like I said, I had that Les Paul Jr. It doesn't have the switch at the top and all that, like the classic, but it's not bad, except that the neck bows pretty easily if you put the wrong stress on it. And so there's that, but they have a whole line of these, like, Les Pauls now that are, like, they have the wino version, the Jerry Cantrell wino, which is a wine-colored one, and a few others that they've got brand new, or almost brand new, for well under what you would pay for a used Les Paul. And they look nice. And that's what I showed the guys. I showed them that, and I showed them a Iommi SG model. Because I want a solid body guitar, but I don't want the Strat or, you know what I mean? Like, I like the SG, and I like the Les Paul.
Well, I mean, if you look at, I mean, look at this Mark Knopfler, for example. Look at the variety of guitars that he plays.
Right.
Through all of the music that he's done. I mean, it depends. If you want something just to play on, to work on, you know, you get a guitar that you like the sound of. If you want a certain sound, you get a Fender. If you want a certain sound, you get a Gibson. I mean, it just depends on what you're playing.
Well, the Gibson, okay, the Gibson SG is different from the Les Paul, but both of them are extremely versatile.
Oh, yeah, I'd love to have an SG. Oh, man. Oh, yeah. I'd love to have an old hollow body.
Well, see, now that's a whole, but that's a whole other sound. For my general purposes, the Les Paul gives me the wide range that I want, that kind of design. So I'm looking at these things, and yeah, I sent him over one that was like $600, brand new. Like, you know, here's a link to it.
Still not bad though, brand new.
That's not bad, brand new. I mean, again, it's not the classic Gibson Les Paul or the, you know, the real Les Paul, which are real expensive, but it is pretty decent. And it's got the same kind of action automatically, so you don't got to screw around with that and start filing things down. Everything is, you know, already factory set. And the pickups are nice, and like I said, they give you a good wide range of sounds depending on how you play it. But I like it. So, yeah, I think I'm gonna aim for one of those, but after I replace this computer, because I need a new editing computer. It's just that simple. And I've been a couple of years now on this used, you know, broadcast computer, which despite the software issues I've had, it's not the computer's fault. despite the software issues I've had, it's been real reliable. I mean, I replaced two different boards, and not boards in the computer. I mean, mixers, you know. I replaced, I've gone through two mixers. I have a third one ready to go because this one I think is about to go. I've been through a lot of cables, couple of microphones before I got this very nice one, which was donated to me. You know, I got the same mic Joe Rogan uses now. But I still have my Shure SM58s sitting. They're not, you know, spent, but one of them's a little bit tricky, right? The wire's a little loose, so you can hear the ground wire moving around sometimes. Mm. But other than that, I mean, like, this computer's done real well, and that was an investment a couple of years ago when, for New Year's Eve, Aaron was like, you know, put out the word to everybody, you know, donate. And you guys instantaneously, Aaron's listeners and mine, came together quick and got me enough money that I could go right on down to a place that refurbishes computers. And I got a much more powerful machine than I needed to do the job. And it's held up, even though it's like a gaming computer. It's done well with the broadcasts and the stuff that I've needed for the network. But the reason why it survives so well is that I don't use it for all this other data transfer and stuff like that. You know, I make the original recording on this, and then I send it to the other computer. And that one has been doing the work now, again, almost the whole time I've had the radio show, that computer has been with me. So, you know, it's about time for a change on that one. And like I said, it's working on Windows 8. And it's, you know, it's about to not have any sort of support for Windows 8, et cetera. So anyway.
Okay, like, well, yeah. Quick update. James Cody Picard, our naked burglar who swam the French Broad River in a daring escape.
Now, this is the guy, wait, this is the guy who was knocking on trailers and stuff and carjacking people or trying to carjack.
He was trying to steal keys to a car, but right. He was doing it naked by knocking on people's doors, and he barged into one lady's trailer.
Right. Okay. Just so we got it straight. So the update on him is?
He has everything transferred until the 19th of September.
Ooh.
When his court date comes up again. So it looks like Mr. Picard, or Pickard, however you want to pronounce it, is just going to bide his time in jail until, I'm sure he's got a public defender.
Mm.
Or he may be being delayed because he hasn't paid his lawyer yet. One of the two.
Well, and also, again, as I've said many times on this show, when people are screaming that, you know, people are political prisoners being in the system since 2021... sometimes things take a while, and with the COVID delays and everything, indeed, there. Look, I've seen people sit for 2 years trying to get stuff adjudicated on all manner of charges, right? So sometimes things happen, and this is the way it goes. I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying it's kind of the way it is. I mean, I knew a guy on a gun charge sat so long that by the time he was going to court to face the charge, one of the plea offers was, you've already served enough time. You know?
A lot of guys will get that time served. I don't know. Mr. Picard, you know, he's like, I'm trying to get dates on when he was hit. A lot of these charges he was hit with after his arrest, and they connected him to a lot of other burglaries and stuff. Apparently the guy, like I said, he had 30-some-odd charges.
Yeah.
So he was pretty active. So we'll just check in again next month and see what the results are.
We'll see what happens. But he is certainly not a political prisoner.
No, they got him naked on a ring on the old ring doorbell, so they can kind of identify their guy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not in love with the fact that we live in the capitalist surveillance state, but I always find it funny. And there's whole TV shows, you know, BP. I don't know. You probably have seen these already, but I find it remarkable that there's whole TV shows basically devoted to what happened on people's ring cameras, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. You know, it's funny. Angela Johnson, stand-up comic, she's got a thing about cameras and security in the house and all. She says, you know, those cameras and everything, basically all they do is provide evidence of how you died.
Well, there's that, or they show, or they prove to Amazon you didn't get your stuff because a porch pirate came and grabbed it, right?
Yeah, so exactly. Yeah.
You know, I didn't get my Mixmaster. Well, you know what you got to do is show us some evidence. Well, I got my ring camera. This guy shows up and just takes it and runs in his car and runs away. All right. Send it over to customer service.
Actually, that was a door prize. We had our corporate meeting 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah?
Had to go to Raleigh on Saturday, and we spent all day up there. And when I got my ticket chosen for the door prize, I went up. I had a choice between an Arctic soft cooler, like a 28-can cooler.
Nice.
It's supposed to be the next thing best, you know, to Yeti. Or a Ring doorbell camera with a year subscription and service.
Wow.
I took the cooler.
Okay, well, look, maybe you needed a cooler, but if I had been in that position, I would have taken the Ring because I've already got two coolers, so,
I needed the cooler.
That's cool. Hey, listen, here's what we're going to do, though. I got one caller on the line, and I'm going to leave him there just for now because I think we should go to break and then get to the business that is, because we got 8 questions to get through regarding the Sandy Hook shooting. What do you say?
Sounds good to me.
All right, and B-Pete's going to read them and put them in the live chat room at Ocelli.com where you can participate in this discussion as well, and I haven't been looking at it because I was looking at the phone lines, but anyway... looks like we got some anonymous in there. We got, there's BP, Graves. All right. Nobody else is naming themselves, so no more shout outs to the chat room, but BP will be placing the questions there and we're going to go through them one at a time, over the course of the next hour and a half. So normal rules on Friday night says you can change the topic if you are the caller. We suspend that this week because you got to stay on topic. And that is Sandy Hook. And the questions that we're asking, and at least, you know, stay around the topic, for God's sake. Let's get it done in the next hour and a half here on the Ocelli Effect. Me and my co-host, BP, will return, hopefully, with some of you joining us. 319-527-5016. 319-527-5016. The Friday night open mic will continue after this.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com. Perhaps you're invested deeply. Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
Revelation through conversation.
Uncle, I'll bet you remember the time when Benjamin Fulford said that the Asian Secret Society was going to dispatch ninjas to take out the Illuminati to change the entire world for the better.
That ain't never gonna happen. That never did.
It never did, did it?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, because there's a lot of false promises.
It's fools? I can't say one.
We better not say and be polite, but there are no false promises at the Ocelli.com radio network.
That's exactly it. Not. It's truth, the point, right to the point. And this is what I like. Straight to the point.
Ocelli.
Ocelli.com.
Listen now.
Listen now.
smoking weed, yeah.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com.
Second segment of the Ocelli Effect here on a Friday night begins. And if you're hearing us live, let's see, at about 8:33 p.m. Eastern on August the 26th, 2022, if that's when you're hearing us right now, then it means we're live and you can call in. Otherwise, you need a time machine to reach us. 319-527-5016 is the number to call. My co-host B. Pete is with me. And again, we have only gotten halfway through the 16 questions, so we're going to begin on question number 9. But B. Pete, before we do, I'm going to bring in the caller and let him sit and listen to the question with us in real time, if that's okay with you.
Yep, fine with me.
All right, so.
Let's do it.
The man with the fan club, Jimmy James. How you doing, man?
Good evening, Jimmy.
I'm sick and don't have a voice.
Oh,
but
okay.
I wanted to try to get out of here. Mm-hmm. You remember how your dogs were interrupted? Well, you know how your dogs died. Now, all of a sudden, here in Michigan, there's some kind of mystery parvo going around killing dogs left and right.
Yep.
They claim they don't know what it is. And yet they said they somehow know it's from Louisiana.
Yeah, I saw that news story, and I was definitely thinking that would be the same thing that happened here, but probably they haven't figured it out in Georgia, because there was a rash of dogs dying over the past few months, and parvo is apparently, you know, a bigger thing than I ever thought it was, but yeah. It's that was weird. I saw that, and I don't know. It came from Louisiana. The article says now, because I didn't see that yet.
It's in Knoxville. Yeah. It's in Michigan. It's in let's see, a couple other. Yeah, it's spouting up all over.
Yeah. So maybe.
And
maybe,
parvo can wipe out a kennel in a matter of days.
Well, my little ones
killed 30 dogs.
Mm.
It killed 30 dogs in the pound the other day.
Mm. Well, yeah, that could indeed be exactly what got my little ones before the news heard about it, I guess. You know, and still I don't have any answers, and nobody's really getting back to me on this. Matter of fact, I tried to call one of these places for a reason, one of these shelters, and... You know, they're so messed up that even through animal control right now, they're saying that they're understaffed and they don't have the manpower to handle everything and couldn't even get around to handling something for us locally here. So just is what it is. Anyways, we're going to – you got another thing you wanted to get in? You said you had two things, Jimmy James.
Oh, yeah. And as far as the Naked Man and other people, what makes it different from the D.C. political prisoners is they haven't been charged in damn near 2 years. I guarantee Naked Man's been charged.
Mm. Well,
yeah, Naked Man's got 38 of them.
Yeah, well, some of those people from the D.C. situation have been charged, and there was a couple of guilty pleas the other day.
They force, threaten people, elderly people. They've got some forced confessions, no doubt. But do you know why they don't want to charge most of these characters? Because that would open up discovery, and they would have to bring forward the 1,400 hours of videotaped evidence that they've been withholding for 2 years.
Well, not only that, Chairman Joe's got to have his, show trial. And the proletariat has decided they're going to go after these guys because they have the ability to do it. And he's going to have his little show trial and show how he has defended democracy and a bunch of other bullcrap.
Lovely. Anyways, what can I say? It's all I was trying to point out is that when it comes down to it, the justice system does not move very quickly for anybody unless you are in a privileged position. You have the right lawyers. You have a good amount of money to work things through. That's the only way you get a good, quick, clean result of any kind. So,
really, look how fast Paul Pelosi got his stuff settled.
Yeah.
He does a little time, wears an ankle monitor, pays a little bit of fine, does a day community service, and his DUI is on the,
and again,
done.
How many DUIs does he have now?
Hold the day.
I don't know how many he's had total. I haven't heard.
Well, it's on one of the oldest stories in the book, the politician or the politician's family who gets away with stuff like DUIs, gets off light. I mean, happens locally constantly, right? How many times have you known a son of a sheriff or, somebody's cousin who walks away from stuff like that constantly?
Hey, we had a guy, this is no lie, this guy in high school had his third DUI still pending in court when he flipped his Trans Am right in front of the highway patrol station in town.
And
this guy, he had...
Still in high school.
He had
right?
three DUIs pending in court when he got his fourth one.
Mm-hmm.
I think he lost his license for 6 months.
Oh, yeah. And I've got no... One of the first tragic things I ever saw among somebody my own age was... a kid is standing next to me with a bicycle getting killed by a drunk driver, literally just jumped the curb and took him out. I felt the wind from the damn car, what did that lady get? Not much. And, she dragged that kid over 100 feet, I think they said, his body. Thankfully, he was killed instantly. But,
Well, we went through a transformation, I guess back in the 80s, and they went the exact opposite where used to it was lenient. They would drop a DUI. If you could get a DUI continued for a year, they would automatically drop it because of the length of time.
Well, this thing
and,
happened.
Nowadays, it's not uncommon to get one postponed that long.
No, I was young. This thing happened with this kid. A couple years older than me he was, but we were still on bicycles. And this happened with this kid like right before the MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving thing got really popular and hot. Right before, people started to clamp down on this. Right before then is when Mike got killed. But anyway, this goes a bit away from the topic at hand, so let's get into it. Sandy Hook,
all right.
The questions. And you have question 9 already in the chat room, I think, at Ocelli.com.
Yeah, this is one thing to point out. Halbig was supposedly the school security expert, and a lot of his questions center around procedures and archaic rules and obscure things where he was trying to build a case of you know, this school was in such bad shape. They even claimed that the school, there were no kids in the school. The school was closed.
Right.
But this, you know, did not happen. It was, you know, just a huge fake incident. Well, and that's where this question comes from. It says, who at the Newtown Public Schools notified all of the parents in writing, as required by Connecticut law, that had children attending the Sandy Hook Elementary School, as well as every school staff member, every school year, of all the potential life-threatening chemical hazards? The school had high levels of lead paint throughout the entire school, asbestos in the ceiling tile and floor tile, asbestos in the insulation, and most of all, the school had very high levels of PCB. And it, the school documented all this, and I'll read you the reply here. It says, the school facility report for that time period is available and easily found with the magic called Google without the need for donations. The summary is posted here. There's a link to the portal. And then it says notifications to parents was made at least by handbook for the immediate preceding year. Page 28 has the required notice. The school appears compliant with the law in terms of safety reports and notifications. Connecticut DOT Governor, Connecticut.gov website also has their specific requirements. And this author just says that he felt like Halbig didn't do his research on his own. And their internet postings were linked to schooldesk.net, which was a website for schools to post policies and things like that. Right. Different schools use it. So kind of a simple answer. If he had really done the research, he could have answered his own question.
And at this, so, just really quickly, at this time in the Northeast, every school year they would issue a small handbook that was generally the size of a standard piece of copy paper folded in half that had some pages that always had these notifications, which also included things like, is there a dress policy? And all of that kind of stuff, all in the book. So you would get a handbook. I think you said real quickly, our handbook notification. That's what they mean by that. And also with the internet being what it was, you could notify people on the internet. But I guarantee you there were multiple ways in which this was disclosed one way or another. And I certainly went to schools that had, you know, I went to schools that were sometimes built in the 1800s. You know, stuff like that, like in Long Branch, and they always had notifications about this stuff.
Well, I mean, anybody our age went to a school that was built at a time when asbestos was not an issue. I mean, my God, right. 95% of buildings have asbestos in them in some form. It's crazy.
Right.
Well, anyway, Jimmy James, any thoughts on that one?
No, not really.
Okay, well, we'll just move on because that's just a case of somebody not bothering to read the literature from the school and then stating that they couldn't have notified them through the literature. I mean, that's pretty much what it comes down to. All right,
number 10. Who provided the urgent medical care to the two children who were not transported to the Danbury Trauma Center until an hour after the school was deemed safe for that 15-mile drive? And this was, he asked this earlier, one of the first questions, and the guy lists the information again. New TA2, with the paramedics, Valentari and Folan, and, John Burke, a female juvenile, was treated with, ALS, advanced life support. And on unit, new TA3, paramedic Daniel Bradley with, Kenneth Lerman and Lori Lerman, and BLS to adult female Hammond, and ALS to the boy. So they put advanced life support on the boy and basic life support on the adult female who was shot in the foot. That's shown in book 2, document 260162. So it's pretty well documented in the report from the state of Connecticut. Let's see. And number 11, I think, is a repeat of an earlier question.
Well, that's funny because now we're into 10. You know, 10 is kind of a repeat, and 11 is a repeat again, sort of, huh?
Yeah. So, okay. Again, he's back on the EMT stuff and first responders. So let me slap. Okay, it's already in there. Who provided the. No. Here it is. 11.
Okay. 11, putting 11, question 11 into the chat room at Ocelli.com so you guys can read along with BP on this.
There we go. 11. Who treated those two children and who treated those two children who had been shot multiple times, like 3 to 11 times, since they did not allow the paramedics and EMTs inside the Sandy Hook Elementary School?
Okay, so we went over this.
We went over this before. So the author here says, well, I suppose I could fairly answer this question with huh, but since I can reasonably guess what he's saying, I'll give it a try, even though it's based on a faulty premise. Inside the school, triaging the victims, these were people who went in the school in the first group of officers that went in there. There were two EMTs, one registered nurse, three paramedics. The director of Danbury EMS paramedic, Matthew Casavecchia, and two tactical paramedics. Mm-hmm. So you had six trained medical personnel going through those rooms. And all of their statements are in book 6 of the report.
Right. And in the initial wave of people that went in there, we had cops that also had medical training, like that registered nurse was also a cop, right?
Yeah.
Okay. No, I'm just, you know, going back over what we went over last time, and there you go. They were sent in because they were armed, and at first it was not known if the situation was under control or not
This is medically trained, tactical paramedics, EMTs, and a registered nurse, all law enforcement officers.
There you go. So that answered that again. Okay. So what?
Again, yes.
Yeah. So now we're on to question 12. Boy, 12. This is moving so fast, we might get to other stuff tonight. I tell you, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we may.
Yeah.
Well, I told you these would go quickly. Because they're pretty much repeats.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, number 12. Why did the parents of the two children who died at Danbury Hospital not allow their children to donate their organs to other children waiting for the gift of life? Now, when I originally read this, I pretty much had the same reaction as the author here. I just thought, where did this question come from, and why would you even ask that?
Well, all right.
I mean, think about it. You know, do you automatically expect parents to give up their kids' organs? I mean, is that a thing that's done regularly? No, it's done occasionally.
Well, look, some parents
but to
might
expect parents.
Yeah, some parents might have the wherewithal to say, you know, immediately, all right, my child is gone, but I would really like to make sure that they can somehow assist in keeping someone else alive, and they might think that way and might make the arrangements right away, or might have already had those arrangements in place ahead of time, right? But not every parent is going to be in the state of mind to go, okay, Dad, now what do I do? You know, some people are just dealing with it, okay, at the moment, and maybe they're not immediately thinking about donating. Now, I know that some people would say, well, that's terrible. You should always think of others. You know, until you face something like this, what am I going to tell you except that I can't judge what they decide to do?
Well,
now he's saying, the problem with his premise though is that he's saying they weren't allowed. So in some way, he must be saying that they wanted this and for some reason it was denied and he wants to know why, right? I mean, is that what we're looking at here?
Well, the way the question is written, it sounds as if the children wanted to donate their organs and the parents didn't allow it, which to me seems totally ridiculous because let's go back to his earlier reasoning. These kids were shot multiple times, from 3 to 11 times. Maybe they got shot and they didn't have any organs that survived undamaged to donate.
But either way, this is a judgment call.
Most of all, it has nothing to do with the it has nothing to do to either prove the fact that these parents didn't donate their children's organs has nothing to do with whether this happened or not.
Well, see, the through line...
It's irrelevant.
Yeah, but the relevancy here and the through line I think he's trying to establish is that at some point, and by the way, this is a parent's decision anyway, so the idea that it would be a child's decision, it's not. You don't. So, look, the idea here, I think, that he's trying to present is that these people wanted to do this and were not allowed, which would lead to the idea that maybe there weren't any organs to donate because, you know, it didn't happen, right? I mean, isn't that what he's trying to get at
right,
ultimately?
That's what he's hinting at without coming out and just flat saying it. He's trying to insinuate, well, the fact that you didn't allow him to donate any organs shows that they didn't die. You know, that kind of thinking. But, I mean, this is Halbig. This was his number 12 of 16 famous questions.
You know,
so,
you would think.
I don't know what was going through the guy's mind.
Well, you would think. That's, you know, look, if you want to go with the gotchas, because obviously this is supposed to be a list of I got you. The idea that the parents weren't allowed to donate, first of all, establish for me that they weren't allowed to donate. Where did it say that? Where did he come up with that?
How does he know that they didn't?
Well, okay, fine.
You know,
but
that's not something that you know, it's very seldom you read that. Not only that, you know, these kids were murder victims.
Right.
They had to go through autopsies and everything else.
Well, right. But the question in and of itself suggests,
just the practicality of being able to make the donation would be hard to do hours after this happened.
It might have been. Might have been.
When you've got that many victims, you've got to do autopsies on. I mean, let's be practical about the thing.
No, very, very well. But the thing is, before we even get there, to my mind, it's like, well, first show me the reason why you're asking that question is you're saying they were not allowed. In other words, the suggestion is they were not permitted to do this. Okay, so what you must show me is first that there was an attempt which was denied.
Right.
Where is he getting that from? That's my question.
I don't know.
Where does he get that even occurred in the first place? Because you have no point of asking the question unless you're saying that, okay, I can see that they tried to donate the organs, and this was not allowed, right?
Well, you know, in all of my readings of everything that I can remember coming across that he's put out,
right?
Even in Fetzer's book, which Halbig had some part in, you know, I don't think the reasoning for these 16 questions has ever been explained, but yet they used the 16 questions as, you know, of all the things that are screwy about this, here's 16 right off the top. Let's start with these. And really no basis for what got him to ask a question like that. I don't remember coming across it anywhere.
Well, it's almost it's almost like saying, how come there wasn't enough lunches provided for all the kids afterwards when they gathered them in one place? You know, like, first of all, show me that food was being provided. I mean, I'm saying you got to show me the premise first. And his premises are very hard to follow. You know what I'm saying? Like, in other words, all right. First off, you got to show me that they were denied the ability to donate the organs. Because the premise of your question is that they were denied this, and he's asking why. Okay, fair question to ask why something happened if you can show it happened.
Well, not so much denied. You know, where were they not allowed? You know, that's his key in the question. Why were the parents not allowed to donate their children's organs? So who was it that was keeping them from doing it? Does he have proof that they tried and were turned down? And I don't know that he has that.
Well, but that's what I'm saying is without that, then how do you even ask this question? As in, I got you.
I don't know.
You know, because it's like saying, how come the kids were not allowed to wear red shirts that day? You know, something.
Right. And the way that he asked it, it's why did the parents not allow their children to donate? That's a kind of a convoluted, I don't know that he meant to word it that way, but that's the way it comes out. Why did the parents not allow their children to donate?
Two children who died at Santa Ana not allow their children to donate? So in other words, the way the question is worded is it's like the children were going to donate their organs and the parents said no, the way he's got it here. Which
and I'm like, you, where's the proof that,
sorry, Jimmy James is struggling to tell us something. What, Jimmy?
I was just going to say that another thing it could have been was a religious issue. That could have been JWs or something.
Yeah, sure. No, look, there's more than one religious discipline that would say do not, you know, part with parts of your body. More than one. Jehovah's Witnesses, good example, I think. You know, even donating blood, I think, is a problem for Jehovah's Witnesses, isn't it? I forget.
Well, I had my appendix out when I was, what, in the sixth grade of school. So when I get to heaven, will my appendix be there?
Well, I don't know. Look, I'm not questioning their beliefs. I'm just saying I know that there are some beliefs that say, look,
well,
you can't.
I just thought of that. Wait a minute. I'm missing an appendix. I want my appendix.
Well, you can't accept or donate parts of your body according to a couple of different religions. You know, just saying. Jimmy James has a point there. No. But either way, there's no point of contention here because who is asking for the organ donor? In other words, where is the inciting request for the organs to be donated and then for the parents to be able to deny it? And as you said, the way the question is, it's like, well, the children were going to donate their organs, but parents didn't allow it. Very weird. I think it was meant to say that they were not allowed to donate their children's organs. And if that's the case, as you said, an investigative issue could be there because, you know, you can't donate stuff until we know what happened to it and we got to examine it first. And,
I mean, suppose he had used poison or something, you know, you can't donate. Hey, what you going to do with that kidney? Can, I have it?
Well, plus you got to find out.
We haven't checked it out yet.
Well, plus you got to find out if a liver's been shot, if they've been hitting the body. You know, you got to figure out, has the liver taken on some bullets, you know, because it might not be worthy of donation now. But either way, I don't know how the donation
issue comes
up.
That was my point, you know, earlier talking about damage to the kids. I mean, a little kid being shot by a AR-15, you know, multiple times is going to do damage. It's not like, hey, you know, go to the pile and see what we can salvage. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous.
No, especially if you're talking about
that's the way Halbig is thinking. I mean, this is the way Fetzer is thinking. That whole group, this was their mindset.
Well,
if you don't have a donated organ, then the kids must not have died.
Well, according to one of his other earlier premises, if you have, you know, a 70-pound kid shot 11 times, because he said it's between 3 and 11 times, 11 times, wherever you're going to put those bullets, even if you put them in the limbs, you know, come on. What are we talking about? That's a lot of damage to a little body.
Right, and he, like I'm saying, you know, all of these questions are like a rehash of the first 8. I mean, even the next one.
Hmm.
13, what happened to the 500 children and 60 school staff members from Sandy Hook Elementary School on December 14th, 2012?
Okay, we're going to take a break after we try to dissect this one, because what do you mean what happened? Okay. First of all, the event is on what, the 12th? Or was
No, it was on the 14th.
It was on the
14th. What, basically, the answer is, you know, the dead were laying there and the survivors were evacuated. I mean,
well, but he's trying to
answer that one.
Well, what do you do with this? What happened to the 500 kids? And okay, there was 500 kids there. And 60 staffers, all right, these numbers. But what happened to them? That's a wide open question. I mean, some of them went home.
Exactly.
You know, some of them went to the hospital. Some of them went to the morgue. What do you mean
some
what
of
happened?
Some were at the firehouse.
You know, some of them were at the firehouse. I mean, I'm imagining that they didn't put all 500 kids in one place. See, again, from all reports, all accounts, which are somewhat confusing, depending on which media outlet you're looking at, right? The MSM did not do a good job with this. They made a mess of things. And I told the guy at the Sandy Hook Facts website this years ago, I said, well, you know, one thing I can say is that partially responsible for confusion and legitimate questions here is the media coverage, which he agreed.
Absolutely.
You know, but
I mean, it was they ran with stuff. I remember when this happened, and they ran with stuff, and just, I mean, it was amazing some of the reports that you had out there of what was going on.
Right. But what happened to them?
What happened? What are you going to do with 560 people?
Well, again, I imagine just like after any other crime, some witnesses were taken somewhere. There were other people that were probably nowhere near this. Out of the 500, I don't think they all witnessed the event exactly. So a bunch of people had to be, sent home. You know, kids or staffers. Look, I was on the other side of the building. I don't know what happened. Okay, where were you? Here? Okay, done. You send them home. There's no way they have anything. Did you see anything? No. Done. I mean,
yeah, and what they were doing, they took them, when they first evacuated them, they ran them right up to the firehouse, which was at the end of the road going into the school. And from there, and I forget where it was that they bussed some of the kids to hold them until parents could arrive. And I forget where it was. But, I mean, basically, they ran them through the firehouse, and then they either hooked up with parents there or they had somewhere that they were meeting for parents and kids to reunite.
Right.
Because the firehouse was, it was like command central, I guess you'd call it.
Right.
Because it was at the end of the road going in there. They could control access in and out
the
road.
And this, again, I remember that Sophia Smallstorm lady with the whole thing about the firehouse. She was hovering on that, right? And they weren't going to put all 500 kids in that firehouse at once. I don't think it was large enough, if I remember right. So I'm sure they sent them through there, probably organized by their grades or classes. That would have been the most logical thing to do. Okay, all of the third graders come through, you know, and third grade teachers and staff come through.
Well, pretty much what they did is as they evacuated a classroom, got them outside, then they immediately took them up there. So,
well, then they were already organized.
You had a group of, say, three classrooms come out, another group of three classrooms come out, and it was an ongoing thing. And it was all documented in book 4 and 6 were the statements concerning evacuations and who led who out, where they went, what they did.
Well, there you go. So anyway, I say we go to a break because we've got a little less than an hour to go, and we're blowing right through these questions. We've only got three left, 14, 15, and 16. Jimmy James has joined us so far. Yep, go ahead.
14's in a room so people can read it, and when we come back from the break, we'll discuss 14.
Exactly. So Jimmy James has joined us so far, and you listening right now, if you're hearing us live, which is almost 5 minutes after 9 p.m. Eastern here on the 26th day of August 2022. If you're hearing us live, you can join us via phone, 319-527-5016, 319-527-5016. Otherwise, I don't know, this might not be too challenging in the next hour or so to get through it, but the 16 questions about Sandy Hook and maybe some other discussion here on the live open mic night on Friday, Ocelli Effect. Stick around.
Uncle, do you remember that time when the year 2012 was going to create the apocalypse, end of the world?
Right. And I thought it would come to the end.
Did it ever end up that way?
No.
Yeah.
Like we say, the only way it would end is when he is ready for to end. That's how it is.
So if you want the real truth about 2012, you better listen to the Ocelli.com radio network.
Radio podcast. .com.
Yeah, forget it's John Cusack.
John Cusack
doesn't know what he's talking about.
Know what he's talking actually about. Correct.
But we here at the Ocelli Radio Network sure do.
Do you sure understand and understand where it's actually coming from?
Ocelli.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Swanson, with new documentation never seen before that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.com.
Why? The Vietnam War,
by author Mike Swanson.
Ocelli.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Third segment of the Friday night open mic begins now at Ocelli.com on the Ocelli Effect. And my co-host Pete is with me. Jimmy James is with us, but he's a little challenged and his throat's a little rough, so I'm sure he'll reserve his comments for something that's necessary. And truth is, it hasn't been necessary to ask any questions or have any contention so far as we've gone through the second half of the 16 questions regarding Sandy Hook. And we're doing this live here on the 26th day of August, 2022. And you can join us, 319-527-5016. Also, B. Pete is placing the questions in the chat room. 319-527-5016. And, yeah, which one are we on? We're on 14 now. B. Pete, right?
We're on 14, yes, yes.
Okay, so yeah. Let's
okay, let me read it out.
Go to it.
All right, 14. Who was the police officer calling into the Newtown police dispatcher stating in his words that he has multiple weapons, he has a rifle and a shotgun, and who has the rifle and the shotgun, as the chain of evidence should show that was found in classroom 8? Apparently, this is a misstatement of the words of the officer, and it says in the reported timeline document, it was Officer Leonard Penna. Now, I pulled up the actual document, and Penna was one of the guys that arrived, ran through the parking lot, met up with two other officers, and they went in through the boiler room. Mm. So they went from the boiler room through the cafeteria out into the hallway and happened to see, I believe it was the janitor.
Okay.
And I'm looking... There's radio traffic as these guys, as Penna was running in, I believe it was, running past the vehicle that was parked out front, he called in that license plate number and said this is possibly suspect's vehicle. They go on around that side of the school. They go in through the back door going into the boiler room and work their way into one of the hallways leading to the front entrance, where the other officers are coming in.
Okay.
And I'm trying to find the actual comment about, it says, Officer Penna is in room 10, provides information on the type of weapons involved in the shooting. Officer Penna, be advised, we should have multiple weapons, including long rifles and shotgun. Now, as these cops were running through, they saw dropped shotgun shells. Mm-hmm. In the parking lot. So that's why they assumed he could possibly have a shotgun. And from the sound of the shots, he assumes it's a long rifle. So that's all he did. Possible weapons, multiple weapons, a shotgun and a long rifle.
Okay.
He's reporting that they were in the room. That's not what the officer said.
Well, because the officer...
He's just saying, be advised, we should have multiple weapons, including long rifles and shotgun.
Because given what he observed, he's alerting the incoming officers of what it is that he thinks they're going to confront. I don't see what the problem is here, except that is there another point in which they say that, I mean, look, because the weapons were outside and there were shells ejected there, doesn't mean the weapons didn't go inside with the guy. And where are they? Did they end up in that classroom? See, at least this question has some sort of, like, you know, where did the weapons go? But he's making an assumption again that they ended up in that same classroom. Do we know where these weapons ended up, by the way?
Yeah, it's in the report. They've got all the ballistic reports and everything included in there.
Yeah. So at some point they're discovered, but not necessarily in the classroom that he thinks they're supposed to be in. Right? I mean, I know the Glock was on the ground. I saw in the pictures recently, I was looking at some pictures on this, you know, that the Glock is laying on the ground in one classroom, and all that. But, you know, here we go. At some point these weapons were collected. And what is his point of contention here? That they were supposed to be collected in one particular place?
Well, there was some discrepancy. One of the weapons that were found was found in the car.
Okay.
And it was put into the trunk, and the trunk closed for safekeeping. One of the officers took it, put it in the trunk, shut the trunk.
Okay.
So that it wouldn't be accessible just sitting there in an unlocked car.
Okay.
So that was one way of securing the weapon while he's on his way into the school.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew there was a shotgun. Like I said, officers had seen dropped shotgun shells out in the parking lot as they ran by.
Okay.
So, you know, but they secured the shotgun. But here's the thing. The last shot was heard as this officer was going into the, towards the school from the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's at 9:40. Okay. We have EMTs getting ready to go in this thing at, what, 9? They're already in the school by 9:45. They are in the school.
Okay.
So one of the things that Halbach is saying, you know, is it took so long. You know, where did all these people go an hour after the shooting? Well, these officers are within 5 minutes. They're in the school, and they're already confronting people in the hallways.
Right.
People seem to forget that. Well, I don't know. You know, they oh, such a long time.
Well,
no, it wasn't really. It was just a matter of minutes.
Well, the other thing about this question is he wants to know who the officer was. That seems to be the question he's asking, right? So.
Yeah, and it's right here in the timeline.
We know that. That's it. So we know who the officer was, and now we know why it is he was saying what it was he was saying on the radio, right?
Yeah.
Where's the problem here? What does the Sandy Hook Facts website respond with here?
It says, again, your premise is incorrect. You misstate the officer's words here and in every embellished interview that you give. However, the report timeline documents that this officer's name was Officer Leonard Penna.
Mm-hmm.
See Book 4, Document 184-096. And that's what I just read from.
Okay.
The timeline. That was provided. So let's see. Question 15.
Now we're on to 15. Almost done. Jimmy James. Yeah. By the way, Jimmy James. Anything you want to add on that, or do you think we're dismissing it too quickly?
I think you're going at the exact right speed.
Okay. Fair enough. So question 15, B. Pete. Go ahead.
Okay, 15. Why would a police officer by the name of Lieutenant Van Gale at 9:45:21 a.m. on December 14, 2012 from the Newtown Police Department, after finding a kindergarten female child in the hallway, make her go into room 8 and leave her? Room 8 is a gruesome crime scene with dead children and school staff. Why?
Did that happen? It is my first question.
Well, yes. Yes, it did happen.
Okay.
And three officers made statements about it. At the time, they were going down the hallway towards room 8. They had not gotten there yet. And this girl steps out in the hall. And under an active shooter protocol, they signaled for her to step back inside the door.
Okay.
Now, common sense would tell you, if the shooter was in the room, she probably would have been dead and not walked out. So if she was able to walk out of the room, it's safe enough for her to back into the room until they could get down there. They had not made it to that room yet.
So she came out of room 8 in the first place.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. See, that's what he's not including in his question there, is that she came out of a room. It's not like they just found her wandering. And, hey, go to room 8 over there. They didn't get there yet, so they didn't assess the scene, and she had just walked out, as you said, so, no, go back in there. Don't be in the hall. Okay.
All right.
I want to show you something real funny. Come here.
Yeah,
right.
Let me find, and let me pull up the officer's statement that explains what they did.
Yeah, sure, because it sounds to me like you just did it already, but yeah, why not? Let's see what the officer had to say, because
let's see, which officer is this? This is, well, let's grab the glasses. You know, getting old is...
Yeah, it sucks.
Rough.
But, I mean, in all seriousness, though, once again, if she just stepped out of that classroom, I mean, you're making assumptions, but the problem is that, yes, go back in there. That makes total sense. You know, not as though they threw her in there because, let's throw her in room 8, you know. That's a mess. Let's throw her in there. We'll keep all the mess together. Hey, what are you doing? No. This is a logical thing that happened.
So here we go. This is the officer that he's asking about. Mm-hmm. And this is his statement in the State of Connecticut report. And it says, now this, remember, this is the group that came through a small stage, which was located on the other side of the cafeteria, okay, into like a assembly hall and out into the hallway. Okay. And it says, he talks about finding the janitor, and then they work their way down that hallway to the main office. It says, the trooper with the shotgun joined me and another trooper as we cleared the main office of the school. I remember finding at least 2 doors which were closed and locked. I knocked on the doors and asked if anyone was in there. I got no response, but we were moving quickly and it was fairly loud at this point. We did not find anyone in the main office. I then noticed Officer Chapman running towards me with a little girl in his arms. This may have occurred prior to me searching the cafeteria and the main office. My memory's unclear. I opened the front door for the school for the Officer Chapman, ran with him through the parking lot. I heard him saying, come on, sweetie, come on, sweetie. I at first thought the child had fainted, but then noticed all the blood on her, and this part is redacted. Mm-hmm. We were running towards the ambulance that was near the back lot of the Sandy Hook Firehouse. There were adults that I believed to be parents that were in the parking lot of school yelling at us. I yelled that it was an unsecure scene. They needed to find safety, get back in their cars. Officer Chapman brought the girl into an ambulance. I got a ride back to the front of Sandy Hook School by the Sandy Hook Fire Company golf court. Let's see. He says, yes, we're going to need more ambulances. And let's see. I re-entered the school front door with Sergeant Cario. We walked down the front corridor of the school, checking the front classrooms. One classroom, I noticed a young male lying on his right side in a fetal position. His body was about 3 feet from the door to the left. Someone yelled out that he was the suspected shooter. It appeared that he had his hands cuffed behind his back. I noticed a large pool of blood spreading from the right side of the suspect's head. So this is after the little girl was found. Let me look at one of the other ones here. 441.
Well, but that's not the little girl wandering through the hallway. That's a wounded girl.
No,
right?
But right. Right. That's one of the officers that he was talking about.
Okay.
Let me get to this next report. Let's see. There we go. And this is going to be the statement of Aaron Bahamonde.
Okay.
And did the interview at the police department. Let's see what he has to say. And a lot of this is redacted because it's got a lot of personal information. Let's see. Here we go. Okay. I then observed a white male who stepped out of a room in the southwest hallway. The male who identified himself as the janitor stated that he's the one that called the police. I remember the janitor had something to his ear, which I believed to be a phone. We instructed the janitor to show his hands, which he complied with. At some point during this, a child came into the hallway from a room in the southwest corridor crying. The little girl stated over and over again she wanted to go home. Okay. Lieutenant Vangley instructed the little girl over and over again to get back into the room. The little girl subsequently retreated back into a classroom.
Okay.
We then slowly proceeded down the northeast hallway. We stopped right in front of the main office area. I radioed headquarters that we had dead bodies. Headquarters advised that if they could send ambulances, which I replied no. I then started seeing officers at the front door, which I opened the door and let them in. I then observed troopers running towards the main entrance. Then one of my officers stated that the main office light had suddenly gone on. We took cover, visually scanned for the suspect within the main office. I remember a trooper stating to me that they had the shooter in the playground. He wanted to know where it was. I then left the school, ran to the playground area. I observed Captain Rios with an individual in handcuffs. I felt that this individual was not the shooter because of his demeanor and wardrobe which did not fit in my mind. I worked my way towards the left side of the school. I then joined some officers and detectives. I was trying to get an understanding of what was going on, and no one knew. I then realized that there was nothing going on outside. I did observe Detective McAnapy and Detective Jowdy taking a position behind trees.
Okay.
So he instructed these guys and then went back into the school.
Okay.
So the girl comes out in the southwest hallway. They're getting ready to go down the other hallway, and they find the shooter. So the little girl was not necessarily in room 8 so far as we can see.
Right.
Now let's go to this last statement, 258-086.
But he did tell her to retreat back into the classroom where she came from, which...
Yes.
Okay. That let's much see. Is clear
Would
so
I say
far.
258?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean... what did I say? 258.
Mm-hmm.
086. Remember that number.
Okay.
258-086. 58-086.
Well, I tell you what we'll do. We'll go to a break real quick, and we'll come back with the with the conclusion on this, because it makes sense to me that we should make sure we have this in line and be ready. All right. So I want to make sure we get through this. This is, we're still on question 15 out of 16. And, this whole thing about sending the girl into the gruesome crime scene. And, well, that would say that somebody knew that that was a gruesome crime scene and sent her into it, after she was just in the hallway. Well, so far, she was sent back into the classroom she, came from. But anyway, we'll continue with this, the discussion of the Sandy Hook 16 questions, with the remainder of the Ocelli Effect Friday night. Stick around.
Do you remember that time when Nibiru, also known as Planet X, was going to get within the gravitational pull of the Earth and cause mass commotion and chaos?
More that. More commotion. More confusion. It goes into the confusion thing. Hey, going nut, he's going back, and it's going crazy.
I hate being confused like that.
But that's exactly how he works it.
It is, but at the Ocelli.com radio network, you're never confused.
No, it's straight to the point.
Straight talk.
And I like that idea.
It's about time. Forget this Nibiru stuff and listen to the Ocelli.com radio network.
.com, and he'd get it right where you want to hear it at. Right straight ahead instead of ding-donging back and forth here.
Ocelli.com.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com. Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough.
Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, she knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination looked into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You you'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
Ochelli.com.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ochelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ochelli.com or Chuck Ochelli, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Chili.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Get ready for the Ochelli Effect.
Last segment of the Ochelli Effect for the Friday night open mic, and we are going through the 16 questions for Sandy Hook. We were on question 15 when we went to break because I wanted to give BP time to suss out the reports there and give us the scoop on this question. But and Jimmy James was with us on the line, and he might have dropped. We may have another caller indeed, BP, as I'm looking over at the lines. But let's finish out the 15th question and get to the caller for the 16th. How about that?
That sounds good. Okay, 15. Let's reread the question.
All right.
Why would a police officer by the name of Lieutenant Van Gill at 9:45:21 a.m. on December 14, 2012 from the Newtown Police Department, after finding a kindergarten female child in the hallway, make her go into room 8 and leave her? Room 8 is a gruesome crime scene with dead children and school staff. Why? Okay, well, I just looked up the statement of our aforementioned Officer Penna, And he was in this group that went down and happened to come across this young lady. So,
because as stated earlier, Penna was in the first wave of cops that went in. That, yeah. So here we go. That makes sense. He would be there for this. Go ahead.
Let's see. Let me get to where the point. Okay, they've come in. Well, let's just start with him running up and radioing in the license plate. It says, I radio dispatch with the registration plate as a possible suspect vehicle. I continued to the right side of the school with Sergeant Bahamonde and Lieutenant Vangel, where we made entry to the school with an unlocked door outside a boiler room. I immediately smelled the odor of burnt-off gunpowder within the school. The three of us began clearing the boiler room, ultimately made our way up to the kitchen of the cafeteria adjacent to the auditorium gymnasium.
Okay.
Upon clearing the kitchen area, we entered the main entrance vestibule area. Vestibule,
yeah.
The first thing I observed, yeah, that one's a toughie. It says, the first thing I observed was a female body lying on the floor in a supine position against the wall adjacent to the main office. The body was surrounded by a pool of blood, which made me then realize that a school shooting had taken place and or in the process. I checked a nearby bathroom to the right of the main office and cleared it. At that time, multiple other units from the state police made entry into the building, as well as officers Chapman and Smith from the Newtown Police Department.
Okay.
We all made our way down the hallway located in the front of the school. As I observed officers Chapman and Smith enter a front classroom together to clear it, I proceeded to the following front classroom. I entered the classroom by myself and observed one young female, approximately 6 years old, who was alive without any apparent injuries. The young female looked at me and stated, I'm scared and want to go home. I also observed multiple bodies lying on the ground in the classroom. And as I made my way further into the classroom, I saw a bathroom door partially open with multiple lifeless bodies on top of one another, all with gunshot wounds. The young female was the only one alive in the classroom, and I assured her that I was there to help her. I told the young female to stay inside the classroom while I checked to make sure I was able to get her out safely. I went to the first classroom where officers Chapman and Smith first entered and observed multiple lifeless bodies lying on the ground, including what I believe to be a suspect who was lying on his right side and appeared to have been handcuffed behind his back. The suspect appeared to be a young white adult male who had multiple holsters on him and a Glock pistol lying on the ground in front of him, it being jammed or locked in the back position. I also observed the suspect to be wearing earbuds, which I believe them to be green in color. It was my initial belief that Officer Chapman or Officer Smith had shot the suspect, although I never heard any gunshots. I then made my way back to the second classroom and grabbed the young female's left arm with my right hand. Change page. Escorted her out of the front doors of the school. As I grabbed this young female's right arm, I felt that her sleeve was covered in blood. I remember getting the young female out to safety away from the school to where multiple personnel were, although I do not know who I left her with. I re-entered the school where I observed a female adult survivor who made her way out of the main hallway. I told her to grab my arm and then escorted her outside to safety. At one point during this, I observed Detective Luke and Chuck make entrance into the school through the front door. At one point, I also observed a high-capacity 223 magazine lying on the ground in the hallway outside the room where I found the young female. So there's the little girl. They told her to step back in the room. They went to the room and got her out. Matter of a minute.
Right. And the reason why they sent her back in is because they had not cleared the room. They did not know if the shooter was somewhere else. And
right.
You put the two cop stories together and you have that's the girl that he's carrying out, that the other cop saw him carry the girl out, right?
Yeah, I mean, as soon as they got down there, he checked to make sure it was safe, took her outside.
Yeah.
The other officer was carrying the injured girl.
And that's it.
So, you know, it's that quick. I mean, a simple answer. It's all documented right there. and they have the and you can hear this interaction in the radio feed of Rick Thorne, who was the janitor.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the phone during this time. You can hear this going on across his phone into the police station.
Okay.
So it's documented. I mean, they have it taped. There you go. Don't understand the question.
There you have it. So meanwhile, looks like Chris Graves has joined us on the phone line. So going to get him on here and see if he's got anything to say. You've been listening, Chris?
Yeah, I've been listening off and on as much as I could.
Okay. So we're on to question 16, yes. But you got anything to add to the earlier discussions? Go ahead.
Yeah, not so much the earlier ones because I wasn't able to listen in full, so that wouldn't be good to wise to comment on something I didn't hear. But the one just that's ending right now, the only thing that I'm not saying it's a weird thing, but BP, did you, when you were reading that, did you mention that? Did you say that the police officer that is writing the report, did he mention that Lanza or the suspect's hands were handcuffed when he was deceased on the ground?
Yeah, both of them.
Two of them said that the suspect appeared to be handcuffed behind his back. Two of them.
Yeah, as soon as the officers went into room 10.
Oh, okay.
No, as soon as they went into room 10,
I thought the official story was that he killed himself before the cops even could get to him. That's the only question I had, you know.
Yeah, he was dead, but they handcuffed him anyway just in case he wasn't dead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's standard, you know. Right. You got the guy gunning his... Yeah, the last shot, in fact, the last shot that they heard across the officer's radio as he was running across the parking lot, that was, they think, the shot where he killed
himself. That makes sense. I just never even... I didn't know that was standard operating procedure. I didn't even think of that. I mean, it makes sense just for, for safety, obviously. All right, I appreciate you explaining that.
I don't think that always happens that you got a handcuffed dead suspect, but in this case they did it. Now I do have a question about that Glock because that's the weapon that he supposedly did it with, right? The Glock?
Killed himself, yeah.
Yeah, so the Glock is laying there.
Was it in the trunk though?
No, the Glock was in the classroom on the ground. And you can see that in the photographs.
His AR-15 was there too.
Yeah. The weird thing to me is that the one cop said that the hammer appeared to be either pulled back or jammed back. So that's the only strange thing to me is if this guy shot himself,
the slide was back.
The
slide was back, which on a Glock, your slide is what engages your hammer.
Right.
And he said it was in the back position, so that means it was either jammed or he pulled it back and locked it on the slide.
Yeah. Okay, but does that make sense with him shooting himself with that Glock? Could it end up like that?
I don't know. Maybe he tried to shoot himself with the Glock and it jammed, so he used the rifle. I'll have to look at the ballistics and see what the report finally said which way he died.
Meanwhile, that isn't the question how big asked, but...
There was also part in the... I'm not sure if in the report that BP was saying that they didn't... I don't know if this is true, but they couldn't even find DNA or fingerprints of Lanza on the killing weapon or that included his suicide.
I don't know about that.
I have no idea. I'll have to look into the ballistics and to the forensic report on the fingerprints and all and see what they ran.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's all in the report. Right, I'd have to dive back through it. But I think, I mean, he was wearing gloves when this took place.
How clean the weapon was,
I don't know. If he's as big a gun nut as they said, he could have cleaned them before he went out to make sure they'd function.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, and if he had gloves on.
I read some of the report that you posted, the official report. I couldn't read like thousands of it, but I think with some of the witness statements of the little kids, they're all like, they're, I know people are going to say, well, each state witness is going to be different than the other, but a lot of these kids were reporting like a guy with a beard and like wearing like an army hat, and then another guy that didn't have a hat on, no beard, and glasses. Like, it just seems so wildly all over the place that I didn't know if maybe you came across the same thing I'm talking about.
Yeah, if you read the kids' statements, they are all over the place.
But, you know, again, kids at that age, they're not the most...
Yeah, but with a beard, though, and then another guy with no beard, and, like, you know, it was so wild. I know what you're going to say, Chuck, but, like, they were so wildly different.
But what I'm saying to you...
You guys had seen it.
Yeah, but what I'm saying to you is that in real situations like this, where I've seen, you know, a handful of kids interviewed, you'd be amazed at the weird stuff that they will claim they saw that is not possible. You know, it's just they think the guy looked different.
It could be possible, but we just don't know.
Well, no,
that's the other thing.
I understand.
They did see something like that.
No, I understand what you're saying.
I know you don't like going down that part, but I'm saying you never know.
No, it's not my resistance to it. It's just that kids at that age will invent stuff sometimes. They've done it before.
Yeah, I think some of the adults have the same wildly different things. Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Well, look, if you got adults making really wildly different statements like that, that's a different thing. But a lot of times with kids where there's been an event, they've turned around and said some stuff that's just not even possible. You know, where...
Well, he did have like a, not a bucket hat, but like a short brim bucket hat.
Yeah.
With him. And, you know, if he was wearing earbuds, I don't know if he had a scarf around his neck or not, but, you know, in a matter of a few minutes with a AR-15 going off, kids, I would imagine, oh, yeah, he had a beard. Or, no, he didn't have a beard.
Yeah, but I mean, a couple of the kids and the adults said that there were two guys, and one had, like, the green fatigues, and the other one was all black. That's the only thing I'm hooked up on. You know, that's just weird.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I've seen events where, like, you know, kids have reported a totally different vehicle. When I mean, that thing I brought up earlier about my friend that was run over by a drunk driver, that vehicle was described by more than one witness as a totally different vehicle. And to tell you the truth, in my mind's eye, I was standing right there and almost hit by it. I don't remember it. And didn't at the time. So
yeah, no, I understand.
You know, yeah. And I was a little older than these kids. I was 11. So you know,
yeah, but I'm saying, like, don't hold me to it. But I'm pretty sure some of the surviving teachers backed up the kids too.
Could be.
That's the only problem I have.
Could be, and it's worthy of looking into. But again, that's not one of the questions he asked here. But I would say, and of course, in the chat room,
it just came out of my mind now, and yeah, I apologize.
No, don't apologize. It's fine. But let's complete the cycle here, because we're on to the 16th question, right? So
yeah, this is the last one. Let's see. Question 16. Why would two Connecticut state troopers enter room 10 at 9:55:31 on December 14th, 2012, which is a gruesome crime scene with dead bodies of children and school staff, and tell a kindergarten boy who they find in the bathroom, whose name is redacted, and tell them so it must be more than one to stay, and they will be both back when it is safe? Now, I put it in the room just the way he wrote it. So, you know, I mean, this guy's a scary expert.
Yeah.
Literate is questionable, but just for safety's sake.
Okay.
Let's see. What 47345. And we'll pull that out real quick.
I'm a little confused by the wording of the question, as per usual, but okay. You know,
47345. All right, let's see what this document says.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a statement, interviewed. Who's the person interviewed? Newtown Police Officer Scott Smith.
Okay.
And he's being interviewed by Detective Paul Leakenchuck and Jeremy Combs. All right, let me get out the glasses again. And I apologize for my voice, but it's a little rough.
It's fine.
It's a long week. Let's see. Here we go. He was one of the first ones there. He says, as I exited my cruiser, I heard approximately 5 rounds of gunfire that sounded as if they were coming from the front of the school. I attempted to remove the M4 rifle from the trunk of the cruiser, but the lock would not release. I closed the trunk and began approaching the front of the school to the right of Officer Chapman. I did not observe anyone outside the front of the building. As I approached the front of the school, I heard a transmission over the radio regarding a possible suspect running along the side of the school. I observed two adult females standing near the dumpsters at the northeast corner of the school. The females appeared very distressed, identified themselves as parents, and told me that they had not seen any possible suspects outside the building. I observed a dark four-door sedan parked in front of the school near the front door with at least one of its doors open and two black sweatshirts lying on the ground near the passenger side of the car. Based on this observation, I assumed at the time that there were at least two suspects. Officer Chapman and I then moved along the north side of the building, checked the exterior of the building in a counterclockwise direction. We continued checking the exterior until I made eye contact with Officer McGowan, who was located on the south side of the building at the time. I did not observe any other people outside the building at the time. I then returned to the front of the building and observed that several officers had made entry into the building and were standing by the front door. I observed a large hole in the glass window immediately to the right of the doorway and also observed that the entry doors were locked. Based on these observations, I assumed that the suspect had shot a hole through the glass in order to gain entry. An officer opened the door from inside, and I entered the front door of the building and immediately noticed a heavy odor of gunpowder in the hallway. Mm-hmm. I observed two adult females lying on the ground in front of the front office. Both females were obviously deceased. Officer Chapman and I began moving down the hallway that is immediately to the left of the front door. Officer Chapman and I began checking and clearing each door that we came to. I remember checking a room on the right side of the hallway that appeared to be a closet with a computer equipment, and that room was empty. I remember checking a second room on the right side of the hallway. That room was a small classroom with several female adults. I recognized one adult as Natalie Hammond. Natalie Hammond indicated that she had been shot in the leg and the arm. I did not observe a large amount of blood, and the wounds did not appear to be life-threatening at the time. All other adults stated that they were uninjured. Natalie Hammond stated that she saw the shooter but was unable to provide a very accurate description. She indicated at the time she had only seen one shooter. No other adults inside the room had observed any suspects. At that time, I left Hammond in the care of the other adults in that classroom. Officer Chapman and I continued to check on the buildings. We did not know the status of the shooter at the time. I do not remember how many rooms we checked on that side of the hallway. I remember checking one classroom on the left side of the hallway. As I approached the doorway, I observed a black handgun in the locked back position. Officer Chapman immediately indicated verbally that there was a gun to alert those behind us in the hallway. As I continued to approach the doorway, I observed a white male dressed in dark clothing lying on the ground in front of the door just inside the classroom. Mm. The male appeared to be a teenager and was obviously deceased due to a gunshot wound to the head. I observed that there was a large pool of blood beneath the man's head, and there was still blood dripping from the suspect's nose. I immediately indicated over the radio that I had located a suspect who was deceased. Officer Chapman and I entered the classroom. I observed an adult female lying on the ground at the front of the classroom who was obviously deceased. I also observed what appeared to be more than 10 children who were all lying on the ground throughout the classroom. All of the children appeared to be approximately 6 years old. I observed, and this is blacked out, especially at the rear of the classroom. While scanning the room, I did not observe any obvious signs of life. I also observed a black rifle located on the ground in the rear of the classroom.
While checking the room for a second suspect, I located two uninjured children, one male, one female, inside the bathroom at the rear of the room. I told them that they were safe. I instructed both children to keep the door closed, and I shut the bathroom door. During that time, Officer Chapman had checked everyone else in the room for a pulse, located one female child with a pulse. Officer Chapman carried the female out of the building, and I remained by the classroom door. Mm-hmm. Additional officers entered the building, began clearing rooms further down the hallway. As the hallway became more secure, I indicated to the officers in the hallway that I would be removing two children from that classroom, returned to the bathroom, and told both children to close their eyes. I then carried the children out of the building, put them in the care of several adults who were located at the far end of the parking lot. The adults indicated that they were parents, and one adult indicated recognition of one of the children. I had observed that the janitor was standing in the parking lot in the first row of cars. I returned to the janitor, who told me how to gain access to the roof. I removed a set of keys from an interior door along a hallway that is located to the right side of the front door. I then located the door which accessed to the roof, and he went up and checked the roof. So there you have it. As soon as he found the kids, he told them stay safe in the bathroom, went out, made sure it was secure, and immediately removed them from the school. So the question is, why would they tell a kindergarten boy who they find in the bathroom whose name is redacted and tell them so it must be more than one to stay and they will be both back when it's safe? So I guess he's asking, why would they tell it? I don't get the part about tell them so it must be more than one to stay.
So it must be more than one child.
Basically the cops.
Which the cop just said, there's one male, one female. So it's more than one stay, tell them to stay. So he told more than one child to stay there, which the cop says, and then he carried out two kids. Which he told them to shut their eyes immediately. He told them, stay here for a minute and I'll be right back, and he came back. That's basically what he says. So.
Pretty much.
That's that. Why is there more than one? The cop tells you there's more than one. Again, a non-question. Well, look, that's all the time we have. And believe it or not, I think we disposed of all these questions that Halbig had without a problem. So, that's that. BP, good job, man. Thank you for reading. I know it was a little tough tonight. Your throat was a little shaky, but we got it done. Thanks, man.
No problem. And appreciate Chris calling in, Jimmy James calling in.
Absolutely. I appreciate them for calling in, you guys for listening, and up next is the Age of Transition. So until next week, I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. Good night.